Krishna. I still got a backlog of some questions from December, although I haven't been on email since leaving Hungary in mid-January. But I thought that today we could address some of these. Here's one from Vinod Manjari in the UK, and she wanted to know, how do we understand in the life of Shukadeva Goswami that he's attracted to devotional service being a Brahmavadi and hearing the verse from the Bhagavatam spoken by his father, Srila Vyasadeva? We also know him to be the parent of Srimati Radharani, so would he have already been attracted to devotional service, being an eternal servant in the spiritual world? Well, the second part of the question is a bit of an understatement, because certainly that someone who is the parent of Srimati Radharani, an eternal servant, has more than just attraction to devotional service. Perhaps a more general way of approaching this question, as well as many similar ones, is how to resolve apparent contradictions. In this case, the apparent contradiction is someone is an eternal associate, which means that they have insatiable desire for devotional service, but to speak of attraction, and also playing the role of a Brahmavadi who has primarily attachment to the bliss of Brahman and not the devotional service of the Supreme Lord. And there are two ways to approach such apparent contradictions. One is to resolve them with information from higher sources, and the other one is to just accept them as what they are, apparent contradictions. That means that something that appears to be a contradiction but actually isn't so, however, due to the limited realization, understanding, and Krishna consciousness of the devotee who's contemplating such things, they appear to be contradictions, and these contradictions become resolved as one becomes both more informed, but specifically more Krishna conscious. So one very simple approach to resolving this apparent contradiction is that we know that Krishna often puts his eternal associates in a certain condition of bewilderment, consciousness, in order for them to fulfill a particular role. The example of Arjuna is one that we are regularly confronted with. Someone who is certainly an eternal associate of Lord Krishna, and yet at the same time, Krishna says, asauchanam asauchastram nanu sauchati panditaha. Why are you lamenting? Why are you showing the symptoms of a pandit, not someone who's overwhelmed by ignorance and bewilderment? And Arjuna himself says, karpanya dosho tasvabhava, that he himself is bewildered, but eternal associates of the Lord are never bewildered. Therefore, we must understand that their bewilderment is arrangement of the internal potency of the Lord, since they are never under the external potency. Similarly, Shukadeva Goswami, being Srimati Radharani's eternal servant, is placed within the womb of his mother, in a condition of bewilderment, of realization, of that of a Brahmavadi. Someone who is absorbed in the bliss of Brahman, someone who takes pleasure out of his existential condition as spirit, and though free from the bondage of matter and the body, still at the same time does not know the bliss of the Lord's form, pastimes, and service. Or even if he knows, for some mysterious reason, he prefers the bliss of being absorbed in the effulgence of the Lord's form. And why is it that Shukadeva Goswami was placed in that position, Arjuna was placed in one position so that Bhagavad Gita could be spoken? The basic knowledge by which one is elevated from ignorance to the spiritual platform? The answer is that Shukadeva Goswami was placed in this position so that he could display the potency of pure devotional service to attract even liberated souls, even those free from bodily concept of life, and therefore establish the fact that the devotional service is not just the means or the sadhana for conditioned souls, but it's also something which is attractive to the liberated souls. And therefore, Bhagavatam begins by explaining Atmaramaschandayo. So this is one way of resolving such apparent contradiction. Another can be seen, for instance, in the example of the identity of the Pandavas. We know that the Pandavas are Krishna's eternal associates, but simultaneously in the Mahabharata we also read that the Pandavas were five Indras who then took birth as five brothers. So how does one resolve that? And of course, the resolution to such apparent contradictions we read about in Chaitanya Charitamrita, as well as in other Shastra, how more than one living entities are present within the body of a personality, in other words, both the eternal associate as well as the Indra, in this case, which would mean that two souls are dominant within one body, and how that works out in reality, of course, is something that's under the Lord's achintya shakti, inconceivable potency. So we can not understand such things. We have difficulty in trying to understand how it is that we as spirit souls are functioning within this one body, what to speak of more than one. And the presence of dual personalities within one body can also be understood in another way, and that is that one personality is empowered or is anavesh of another, in which case he is personally present as well as he represents the potency of another personality. So that was for Vinod Manjari, and thank you for that question. And this is the beginning of January. Tarun Krishna is asking the place of action, the performer, the various senses, the many different kinds of endeavor, and ultimately the super soul. These are the five factors of action. He's quoting from the 14th verse of the 18th chapter, and the question is, can you explain what is the difference between the body and the various senses as mentioned in this verse? The body is the aggregate of all of the senses, including the mind, which directs the senses in order to fulfill the false aspirations of the bewildered soul. This metaphysical study is found in much more detail in Brahma Sutra and Vedanta Sutra, where there is a very methodical analysis of the interaction between senses, sense objects, the living entity, in order to empower the intelligence to understand the workings of the living entity within this world under the influence of the material energy. This type of study is important for the jnani, for a proper understanding of the falsity of material pursuits, and thus to acquire a proper sense of discrimination and detachment. Krishna mentions these things, but he does so in quite an abbreviated way. Because for a devotee, positive engagement of the senses, the body, in the actions of pure devotional service under the direction of the spiritual master, external manifestation of the supersoul, these automatically achieve detachment from matter through purification of the heart. By this, one acquires transcendental knowledge, and simultaneously one acquires a real taste for the devotional service of the Lord. Thus, it is important for us to apply the teachings of Gyan, inasmuch as Lord Krishna is giving them to us, because ultimately He is giving them to us. We should know them, be aware of them, but see how to engage these factors and focus these factors in the practice of pure devotional service. And the last question comes from Balaram, and he's asking about offenses. He says, a young disciple can see or hear that a senior disciple commits an offense against his spiritual master, and later, because the spiritual master is very merciful, he forgives the senior disciple and gives him additional service, but the young disciple is not present when the senior begs pardon and therefore doesn't understand the situation and cannot forget what happened, and what can he do? Phew. Anyway, when there's no periods, it makes things a little difficult. What can he do? What does a devotee do when he doesn't understand something? He inquires from his spiritual master, he inquires from senior devotees, whether it's why a devotee commits improper activities, or whether why it's the spiritual master who gives mercy and forgives, why he does those things. Every time that we don't understand something and we cannot resolve things, we have two alternatives. One is we immediately approach senior devotees, spiritual master, and we ask them to illuminate things for us. And the other is that we may study Shastra, try to understand things on our own, and see if gradually, bit by bit, things become clear. And in time, things may become clear. If for some reason they don't, then fine. We can then approach a senior, and that is probably the preferable of the two methods. Rather than just immediately approaching, we should use our own intelligence, we should reflect, we should try to see through the instructions of Sadhu and Shastra, and try to resolve things on our own. That means that we've already taken advantage, we're putting to use instructions that we received before. And if not being able to resolve things in this way, then we go to seniors and ask. The first approach is a lazy man's approach. I don't understand something, immediately I should go to Guru. Well, we should try to understand. And if we really can't understand, then we inquire. And this is, once again, a principle. It's a principle that being educated in some particular field of devotional understanding, having my previous questions or question answered, does not simply relate to a particular information or question being resolved, but it's also meant to overall cultivate the intelligence of the devotee so that he can understand things, address things, approach things on his own. Devotees are meant to be trained as being Brahmins. Brahmins are thinkers. They are people who try to think and take advantage of what they have heard in order to understand the world around them, the devotional world around them. And particularly older devotees are expected to have assimilated the knowledge which they've received from others as well as through Shastra. And that assimilation of knowledge, that maturing of Krishna consciousness is called wisdom, or it's called realization. So in this way, we should try to resolve the perplexities that confront us. Okay, we'll be in touch tomorrow. Hare Krishna.